This is the Q Talk America Radio Network.
And we are back, beginning of hour two. Hi, everybody. Welcome to it. It is the show. It's show 324. For those of you keeping track at home, this is the 14th of November, 2017. You're back in Studio C with all four of us this week. Kat Carlson, that's here Marnie Reiner. Al Perkins is here.
What did he call me?
What did I call you?
Marnie Reiner.
Did I call you Reiner?
How's your brother Rob, by the way?
Fine, thank you.
At this point in my life, you'd just be glad I remember any part of your name.
Oh, wow.
I
mean,
I forget half the time where mine is. It doesn't really matter.
Wow.
Anywho,
I'm Margarine.
We just did our intros. Coming up in hour three is two things and entertainment from Al Perkins. So we'll get to those in just a few minutes. But in the meantime,
I'm actually prepared for that.
Oh my gosh. Which one? Al's entertainment or your two things?
My two things.
Wow.
I don't know.
Get ready, ladies and gentlemen. Hour three is going to be very exciting, where Kat's not actually making up stories.
It's not that exciting.
She's really telling you what she rehearsed. Well, the Columbus Police Department opened an investigation on a woman named Ruth Gregson and her, get ready, 65 cats.
Wow.
In October of this year, after several neighbors reported small objects being stolen from their homes. Several victims reported being visited by Miss Gregson's cats before noticing the disappearance of several shiny objects, like valuable cutlery and pieces of jewelry. Now, just so that we know who we're talking about, let's take a gander at old Miss Gregson. Mm. There she is. I don't think those eyebrows are hers. I think she's modified those a little bit.
Maybe.
Just a guess. I'm not sure. But anywho, despite their skepticism, investigators began a surveillance operation and were amazed by what they discovered. According to the Columbus Police Chief, Kim Jacobs, dozens of cats were constantly coming and going, bringing home literally anything that was shiny. She was like Fagin in Oliver Twist, but she was using cats as thieves instead of children. In less than 3 hours of surveillance, the detectives saw the cats bring home more than 100 objects. Upon searching Miss Gregson's house, investigators found, get this, $650,000 worth of jewelry and precious metals, along with piles of worthless shiny baubles.
And cat shit.
Chief Jacobs says the elderly woman confessed to training her cats to steal, saying that the felines had to earn their meals. She would only feed the animals if they brought home valuables.
That's how Fagin works, right?
Only feed the animals if they brought home valuables, so the animals had to steal every day in order to survive. Most were voluntarily malnourished, so they would easily gain the neighbors' pity and then be allowed into their houses. According to the Columbus police, Miss Gregson's animals could have stolen from more than 5,000 different homes and apartments in the area, and the investigators invite possible victims to contact them if you think a cat has visited you and stolen.
Columbus, this is literally a cat burglar.
Columbus Police Chief Kim Jacobs told reporters that the number of charges filed against Miss Gregson could reach over 5,000. Columbus Police Chief Kim Jacobs also told reporters that, Miss Gregson was Miss Gregson is the first person in American history to be accused of training cats to steal, this isn't the first time that animals are trained to commit crimes. Back in 2009, a surveillance caught a monkey stealing hundreds of dollars worth of plants from a Texas nursery. At the time, the police and the store owners were...
That's really specific.
...had hypothesized that the monkey had been trained to take the plants and hand them over the fence to a waiting human accomplice. Also, back in 2013, a Chicago court sentenced a man to 5 years in prison for training ferrets to steal cell phones from people on the street and on public buses.
I'm sorry.
It's just economy right there. Like, that's just efficiency and economy. If you can get animals to do your crimes for you.
But
two things. You like send a ferret at me, you can have my phone.
Yeah.
Guess what? I'm surrendering to your powerful
ferrets
ferret.
Ferrets are nice. Ferrets are... I don't have
and
a problem.
Second of all, it would be better if she walked around the house singing, "You Gotta Pick a Pocket or Two" to the cats. In the spirit of Fagin from Oliver.
You have to.
Yeah. Right.
I don't think she looks like somebody who's going to. But what I mean, like, this...
Have you seen Fagin?
Don't know. But she looks a little malnourished herself. Maybe she's supposed to bring home something.
Yeah.
But the one thing I thought of earlier, it said in the story that they were trained to bring home cutlery. I don't see a lot of cats just walking around with like butter knives and forks and spoons. But wouldn't you notice that if you were running, if you saw a cat running out of your house stealing flatware?
Yeah.
Could
you open the door?
I was actually hoping that the secret twist at the end of that story was that all of her cats were actually raccoons.
Mm. That'd be funny.
Because they're often attracted to like shiny things and prone to hoarding.
And they look like bandits.
Right. Right. They got the little masks on already.
Yes.
I was really hoping for a raccoon twist there.
Dang it.
I'm sorry.
It's an animal story I can get behind.
Yeah.
Those are animals that are earning
their I'm sorry to steal your thunder on that.
Oh, no. That's all right. That's all right. You know, speaking of criminals, in the former penal colony of Australia.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Woo. That was a stretch, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. But you got there.
We got there, yes.
Celebrations broke out across Australia after a 2-month national postal survey came out overwhelmingly in favor of legalizing same-sex marriage.
Yeah,
we're almost there in Australia. Celebrations, singing, and tears greeted the announcement in Melbourne. It's the beginning of the end of a long-running campaign to allow marriage equality in Australia, something already legal in the majority of English-speaking countries worldwide, even the ass-backwards of the United States.
Oddly, we're ahead of the curve on this one.
Right. Yeah. It's the first time in a while.
Right, exactly.
Speaking after the result, their Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull, said it had been an overwhelming response in favor of yes and called for same-sex marriage to be legalized before Christmas, he says. He's quoted as saying, they voted yes for fairness, they voted yes for commitment, they voted yes for love, and now it is up to us here in the Parliament of Australia to get on with it, he told reporters. Politicians are expected to begin discussing the specifics of the same-sex marriage bill as early as this week. However, even ahead of the release of the results, conservative politicians were gearing up for the fight over how to get it done. So they're still going to bicker this fucking thing out.
Yeah.
I don't know. But interestingly, and something that you don't see in the United States, 75% of their electorate participated in this voluntary, non-binding mail-in vote.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it was that important to their entire country, which is also a continent.
Yeah.
But mail-in votes always get more returns.
Yeah, but not
75%. Not 75% of the electorate.
But that is exactly why they don't want to do it here in the States, because the R's know that they're fucked if they do the mail-in ballot.
Right. Yeah, because the way our politics work is that Democrats and liberal candidates and policies tend to prevail when mail-in voting happens.
Mm-hmm. Though they could have saved, what was it, $1 million in Montana if they had done it in mail-in, but they decided, no, we have to have everybody go.
Because they didn't want the Democrats to win.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's the thing. But more good news this week from Australia.
Absolutely.
We had good news in this country last week, good news in Australia.
I like it.
Yeah,
It's almost a trend. We're going to fuck it up somehow. No, we're going to fuck it up.
Oh, sure we are. Yeah. Sure we are, especially with stupid fuckers like Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah. Speaking of stupid fuckers, what's your story?
Speaking of the stupid fucker.
He's a joy.
For real. So it doesn't apparently matter, you know, or I mean, the big deal is actually how you are registered, is how you are registered to vote. Because that makes or breaks whether you're a pedophile.
Oh, yes.
From what Russia's saying.
Sure.
You can't get on Roy Moore's.
Can you be a straight line pedophile?
Well, maybe. You can't be an independent pedophile, but if you like little girls, and we have to find a reason for it,
right?
Well, by God, there's your fucking reason, because Roy Moore apparently was a Democrat when he liked little girls. He doesn't anymore, I'm assuming.
Well, he's a Republican now. He's registered.
Well, exactly.
Sure.
Yeah, that's
not registered as a sex offender like he should be.
Right.
But registered as a Republican. Same thing.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, you know, it's... But the fact that Limbaugh came out with that, and...
Well, yeah.
They're grasping at straws. They're saying just inane, stupid shit.
But he leaves that for Hannity.
Right?
He leaves just a plain old fucking stupid for Hannity, yeah.
And then he goes... He jumps the shark every fucking time with some of the craziest shit. What were you going to say? I'm sorry.
Well, and some of the problem with that particular observation is the way that the political parties have changed and evolved over the last, 40 years that we're talking about?
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Well, closer to
50 years?
More like 50, when the Dixiecrats became...
Right. But still, you know what I mean? Like, you had to... The Republican Party didn't become such the party of hateful old white men until the evangelicals took it over.
In 1980,
Right. Sure. You know what I mean?
So but they all switched with the Civil Rights Act, and then it became official with Ronald Reagan leading the white charge. Like,
yeah. So it makes a lot of sense that Roy Moore was a Democrat then.
Yeah.
Sure.
And switched to be a Republican because the hateful racist old white men moved parties.
Yeah.
Right.
To get away from Lyndon B.
But the thing is, it doesn't matter
No.
And it shouldn't, but it's no. it's such a cynical. And dumb.
Yeah. Cynical, nasty, stupid.
Yeah.
All the things I usually associate with that fuck, fat, fuck, drug-addled fuck.
Sometimes I just wish they'd be smarter about being hateful.
Right.
That's all I'm saying.
Put some thought into it.
Put a little effort into your hate, would you? Sure.
So I can hold my head up high while listening to you and calling you a fat, drug-addled fuck.
Because it's true.
True. Yeah, it just, that part, when I saw that, I thought, come the fuck on. And for any Dems that are getting, you know, real high on their horse, like, high and pointing the finger, hey, Joey.
Hello, Joey from Canada. My God,
I'm on fleek.
Joey Ferrucci. Holy cow.
Thank you, brother. But anyone who is, it's not about that political party. It's not about, you know, and Dems, if they're getting too full of themselves, there's Billy Clinton. There are things that have gone on. Let's not kind of go overboard with pointing a finger.
No, and I don't think anybody's saying, well, except dickhead, Rush Limbaugh.
Yep.
Nobody's saying that the Dems are all completely clean aside from Clinton. Right. Everything else.
Right.
Granted, that wasn't pedophilia either.
No. And you're absolutely right.
Again, you got to make that sexual assault distinction, and it is assault, but the pedophilia part of it,
the mind blowing.
Yeah, it touches. This sounds horrible. It touches everybody.
Meaning
it's not just a white or black or Chinese or any, nothing. No, it's everybody. It's everywhere.
Show me on the elephant. It doesn't matter what your
religious. And we're finding out more and more about just how icky it all is. You know what I mean?
Hi, Jenny.
Like, from a male point of view, as I heard, is it Donnie Deutsch? Is that his name that's on NBC?
I don't know that name.
Oh, yeah. I believe that's his name. He's got great hair. Older guy. sometimes he's a douche. But he was saying, like, it's kind of opening his eyes to the stories. As last week, one of the reporters and Nicole Wallace on Friday were telling stories about like what shaped you as a young woman, and he was listening to it like, I just never,
like, how gross is that, and hadn't realized that.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about
all of the women around him have put up with that.
Like, everybody had a story, and he was just like, what the fuck. I think fuck's just gonna be the drinking word.
Is McCaskill
is that fair point?
McCaskill was reported, was quoted as saying that she learned when she started working around the Capitol and all of that, she just learned to avoid elevators. She walked stairs everywhere because if you got an elevator, as a woman in government, you were trapped.
Sure.
And she just knew, so you just avoided.
Oh.
And I'm like, really? How horrible is that? That you're, regardless, but I mean, I'm not saying
like
it's just there.
Parking garages. Like, I have a friend that was like, nope, not parking in a parking garage.
Yeah, because
it'll be later at night, and then I'm alone in a parking garage, and it's my fault.
Or the idea of just be with a buddy. Like, always have somebody with you.
But you can't be alone because all of a sudden that makes you a target. Right. And suddenly you're just a little.
Earlier today when I saw that quote from, somebody had tweeted it, where it says, Rush Limbaugh, when Roy Moore was attracted to inappropriately aged girls, he was a Democrat. And it wasn't me, but the other person said, my response is, when Roy Moore was attracted to inappropriately aged girls, he was still Roy Moore.
Yeah.
Right.
That's the takeaway.
Well played. Yeah. True. Yeah.
And as they were all like, if this is true, I'm sorry, but when the newspaper has firsthand accounts of the people that were working at the mall that were like, can you just not come to the mall?
Right. Yeah. Like 30 sources they've got for these stories. They're like,
and, you know,
why wouldn't anyone come forward with that kind of stuff beforehand?
Because he was the DA for the, and it just turns out that people are willing to just turn a blind eye.
Yeah, exactly.
To so much.
Exactly.
Yep. And, you know, I think the gift from the Harvey Weinstein, did I say it right this time?
I honestly don't know.
I think you got it.
Irv Weinstein is wrong. Irv Weinstein. Yeah. The gift from that is that it's anybody can come forward, and like, so often people are like, oh, they want the attention, they want this, they want that.
No.
I'm sorry, Gwyneth Paltrow doesn't want any of those things.
No.
You know, Angelina Jolie clearly doesn't want these things. You know what I mean? Like, she's not desperate for attention.
No.
You know, so once you get people that they don't fall under those categories, that they have no other reason to come forward.
Well, and the other,
then all of a sudden, you know, because immediately Sean Hannity was saying, "Oh, they just want the attention." Oh, the one, and he said the one was divorced. divorced and had bankruptcies in their past. Right. That was what Sean Hannity was saying.
And that's what
like the
sure.
guy that you backed for president and suck his dick every night, the divorced guy with bankruptcies, that's your new thing that she deserves what she got or she's lying because these two facts? Like that was Hannity.
Should yep. save that clip for some time in the future. I yeah. think that one's going to come in handy again, sounds ironically.
Like a, sounds like a thing one, thing two yeah. from Chris uh-huh. Hayes.
There you go. So sure. that leads us, Sean Hannity segues us to what to do with your coffee maker. so Sean Hannity was on, let me read this right because there's a lot of like name dropping here. Turns out Sean Hannity has enough time to go on somebody else's shows.
He has a radio show, but I know he had went on other people's shows.
Oh, I thought...
Because he has his own radio gig, which is where the
pseudo-confession...
I bet he's a lovely guest, though.
Mr. Hannity, on his radio show, while speaking with a co-host, Linda McLaughlin,
right.
seemed to justify Mr. Moore's reported conduct by calling one of the encounters consensual. So, this is what happened on his shows. That's what happened on his talk show. That it was he described it as consensual.
What, everybody that I dated, I got their mother's permission. If you're 32 and you're asking somebody's mother's yeah. permission, there's a bigger problem.
Yeah, okay.
right. Well, are they going to give a dowry? Like, what the fuck, right? Here's our goat.
Here's our hope chest. Yeah. Right. Good luck.
right?
God.
What the hell? Like, so, that's so back in some land. What land? Your land? My land? Do you know?
No.
Do you know what I'm talking about? Like, back in the day, where, like, you have a dowry, and you're
are you talking about, like, arranged marriages oh, yeah. in, like, medieval like, times? And, like,
back in the day, it was...
Right. Or in many countries still today.
Yeah.
You're right.
That have arranged
but
managers.
But not this one.
No, it's... Yeah, this is not... I mean, no, Alabama not, might have those right. same not traditions like that, yeah. of arranged
yeah.
marriage.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Moore made his sexual advances, including a 14-year-old, when he was in his 30s. Mr. Hannity described those actions as consensual. So later on his television show, Mr. Hannity said that his statement was absolutely wrong and that he misspoke. He then brought up the possibility of accusers lying for money or for political purposes. So on Friday, Angela Carusone, the president of Media Matters for America, the partisan watchdog organization that has campaigned against Mr. Hannity since at least May, began to criticize advertisers for sponsoring his show in light of his comments about Mr. Moore. And there was a list going
around. I saw
around
a list that was going around, yeah.
Of people, of his sponsors. And
I emailed
yeah,
it to you.
Yeah, and the one was Dollar Shave Club, which I got to break up with because I hate those fucking razors.
Oh.
So they pulled the ad. So Keurig was one of the sponsors. Yeah. They got the notice that of what he had said. They pulled their ad for his from his show, just like they had done with, others had done for Bill O'Reilly.
Right.
And that's
right.
what brought him down, is when advertisers started backing off. So Keurig, so then people, Republicans started having this thing of trash or Keurig. I can't remember what the
yeah,
hashtag was.
Something to like, yeah.
Boycott Keurig. And they were throwing, their Keurigs off of balconies.
Smashing the shit out of them.
Smashing them. One guy did it like Office Space with a baseball bat. He went all gangster on it. So then...
And they're not cheap.
No.
It's not like you're just throwing a $25 coffee pot overboard.
Right.
These are $150, $200.
Give it to someone. You right. know what I mean? So...
But in Keurig, I don't think would really give a shit because they're just going to buy another one.
Yeah, of course they are.
They got K-cups out the ass yeah. in the cupboard.
So then it came to Keurig's attention that there was a boycott Keurig, and Keurig went back on all their things and then said they didn't mean to get involved in all this. They didn't mean it to be a political stance.
Okay.
They accepted the apology. Hannity accepted their apologies, said he's got 5 Keurigs. So all of a sudden, like, nobody had done the noble thing.
Yeah.
And then Hannity was saying that Keurig was a victim of a group that has a radical agenda, and they didn't know. So... Then the people that were supporting him that threw the Keurigs off, he started sucking Keurig's dick, so he threw the people supporting
right,
him,
right.
supporting a pedophile, under the bus.
Sure.
And it just turned into this clusterfuck
domino effect.
Of nobody sticking to their guns on this story in any way, shape, or form, except for the lady from Media Matters. So, just absolutely fucking crazy. Just...
What?
So here's my comment on this. If you've already paid $400 for a coffee maker and then you smash it, you know who gets hurt in that?
You.
you who paid $400 for a thing that you just smashed.
Yeah.
Idiots.
Because now you've got to go find a way to make coffee.
What is the old expression?
Cutting off your nose to spite your face?
No. But it's like if you have a grudge against somebody, it only hurts you because they don't really fucking care.
Right,
so
yeah.
It's the same thing. So again, you spent the money for it. Yeah. You enjoy it. It works. Just don't buy another one if you're mad.
It makes for fun videos, but like you're out $400 that you probably couldn't afford and that you probably... Right. Like, decided to forego health insurance so that you could buy the fucking Keurig.
Right.
Like, my dad wouldn't buy anything from a non-union company. That was his big thing. Like, non-union, he wasn't buying it. But if he had a coupon, he figured that way he was hurting them because they weren't getting paid full price for the product.
Sure.
So if you had a coupon or some money off, there then you were kind of you were getting a dig in it. But he meant it as a sincere dig. Like, he, even if he didn't want it, if it was a way to get something for less... Because they weren't, he didn't feel they were paying their workers enough, so he should pay less for
the product.
Their product. Yeah. So it wasn't like, I really want this, but I have morals to stand on. Like, he really thought he was going at them from a, like, punching them from another angle. First, I boycotted them, and then I just bought it cheaply.
Nice.
When you told that story, I was reminded of why my grandfather used to tell me it was better for him to roll his own cigarettes than to buy them at prepackaged, because he decided that if he rolled his own cigarettes, it took longer and he smoked less, and the filter really just didn't do anything anyway. That kind of reminded me of the same analogy.
Yeah. And trust me, as a child, that we went to union plants, like as our travel plans, where like we went and saw Beechnut. Is it Beechnut gum?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We saw Gerber baby food.
Right.
We went to a cigarette factory and watched cigarettes be made, which was fascinating.
Kind of cool. I'll bet.
We went to Utica Club Beer and saw beer being made. Okay. So we went to Coors later. We were all like, had one for Alfred or Al, because, well, he would have liked this too. I don't know. Because they were definitely pro-union.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I don't know if they have union there, but they did had that whole union issue in the 70s that became pro-union. So it was just funny, like the stuff that he would take us to see being made to like introduce us to manufacturing. I don't know, but it was fascinating. And you can't bore me with
it. I love those big plants.
You can't
those
bore me with a tour.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Can't bore you with a tour. Well, there's that.
I feel the same way. Every time we go somewhere, I'm like, is there a tour we can sign up for? I want somebody to tell me about this.
Is there a docent for this? Because I really
need
some...
Even if it's self-guided. Like, if you just want to give me the headphones, I'm in.
A self-guided tour is even better, because then I can linger. Right. No one's going to rush me along to the next exhibit.
Right.
American celebrities like Aziz Ansari, Hasan Minhaj, and Mindy Kaling have all achieved remarkable... I don't do the segue. I just couldn't segue out of that into this. There was no way I could do it.
Couldn't jump to India.
Couldn't go from self-guided tours to Indian Americans.
No, unless you're going to take a tour of the Squishy Mart. Then that's different.
And there it is.
Okay, fine. We got there with accents and a segue.
Squishy Mart.
Or whatever it's called. Quickie Mart.
Write down the time. That's the moment of the show today.
Those people has achieved remarkable success in recent years. They have played multidimensional characters, created their own shows, and helped the nation understand all the struggles and joys of a lot of immigrant experiences. But there's one character who is still hopelessly stuck in the past when it was acceptable for Indians to be mocked and stereotyped on national television, and that person is Apu Nahash Api Mapitilan,
from The Simpsons,
which is the owner of Quickie Mart. For nearly 30 years, Apu has been a fixture in the fictional town of Springfield, the home of The Simpsons. The character is still working at the town's very own Quickie Mart. He's still known for his accent and his ridiculous catchphrase.
Which is,
which I don't
come again.
Come again. Thank you. Come again. Thank you. Thank you. Come again. Yeah. He is still also voiced by Hank Azaria, who is a white voice actor. Now,
That does make it way worse.
Right. So, comedian, I saw this last night on The Daily Show, which is how I knew about it. Harry Kondabolu, a Brooklyn-based comedian, believes the time has come for Apu, and more important, the forces that created the character, to face a reckoning. He takes on these big issues in his new documentary called The Problem with Apu. It's a film that he interviews many of today's biggest South Asian American celebrities, including Aziz Ansari, Cal Penn, Asif Mandvi, Hasan Minhaj, and I can't even begin to pronounce the rest of the names in this list because I'm going to just completely butcher them.
You've been doing pretty good so far.
He asked them about their own relationships with Apu and the difficulties that they've had in non-stereotypical roles. I've already got it because it's so easy to find shit on that new thing. I've already set the thing to record to watch it. He's talking about the fact that there is a gap And I understand this, and it's funny that obviously we're all white sitting in this studio, so there's not a lot of we have been able to enjoy white privilege our entire lives, regardless of being gay or not. He said there's two notes in time about the, he calls them the brown faces, but it's either you're Cookie Mark or you're a cab driver or you're a 9/11 terrorist. And he goes, there's just a huge gap. And he goes, I'm just tired of it. He goes, we are so much more than that with all this. So this documentary that he has done is in regards to that. And what I'm assuming is going to happen is all of the other things. Well, the other thing I think of always is doctors. They're and I don't know what it is. Is it in their culture where they just study like crazy? They're so intense and so intellectual in so many ways. Like, they take a lot of high tech jobs, doctors, all kinds of.
They must take education seriously.
Yeah, they seriously they must.
Yeah,
but anyway,
it's funny how one thing might.
Well,
lead
they're
to
definitely
another.
Not from this country.
It's on. Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, it's on True TV. It's on. I don't know if it shows it. True TV.
Can you log into your Contour from here?
I cannot. If I can, I don't know that yet, but I'll figure that out.
I'll bet you can through your phone. There's an app.
Probably so. It's called, again, The Problem with Apu. It's True TV. That's what it is on. I believe it's the 19th of this month, which I think makes it like, what, Friday, Saturday? Something of this week. So, anyway, I'm recording it. I'm going to watch and see.
You're just going to get a blank stare from me on dates and times.
But anyway, it's the 19th of this month. Five days from now. And on True TV here in the Americas. So,
there's a very funny joke. I think it's from the first season of The Mindy Project, where, because there was all those cast changes, The Mindy Project had like 8 million different settings.
There was a lot of things happening.
Friends,
in those
family,
first couple
office
of seasons,
workers.
Yeah.
You just never knew where that show was taking place, and characters would come and go. Like, didn't you have a best friend last week that was in every scene, and now you can't remember who she is? But at one point, she says to this girl, she's like, am I, like, exotic to you? Like, am I your brown friend? And she's like, you know, there's a billion of us. We're not really exotic.
Right. We're not that special.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, we're not rare.
On The Daily Show last night, he said, you know, there's, like, a billion of us.
Hi,
and Trevor Noah's like, in this country? And he goes, no. He goes, if it was, I'd be having my own show.
And then
the curry people.
The curry, there it is.
Are you talking about the curry people?
Yes.
Thank you. Come again.
And I cannot remember his name awfully, but the one from
Give
the big
clues.
No, the big sick. The
oh, that's Aziz Ansari.
No. That's
isn't it?
That's Master of None.
No.
Oh fuck,
yeah.
I can't keep him straight.
The big sick guy is from Pakistan.
But I enjoy him. He's
fun. So that's where the arranged marriage and all that stuff, and that the whole Pakistani culture and all that stuff
comes up
in that movie.
Okay.
And the joke that I'm not Indian. Like, because, you know, like, somebody's throwing out racial slurs at him, and he's like, it takes him a while.
Yeah.
He's like,
keep trying.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very funny joke. He's like, they get in the right part of the world, but they're not even close.
In that movie, The Big Sick, one of my favorite things every time, who could be at the door? His mother. And he, look who was in the neighborhood.
Yeah,
and he walks
fast.
In with this girl and her father. Oh, it was every time she did it, it was so funny. So, so funny. Well, thank you. Come again, Kat.
That's fantastic. Well, where did my page go? There it is. So this is a local story that just frightens the shit out of me. It's very, very short, but it's very, very
scary.
Can you
fix it as mine, Inspector?
Potentially.
Okay.
Potentially.
Or legislature, if you're going to climb that ladder.
Mine Inspector. I mean, mine inspectors make more money, as it turns out. I looked into it. Yeah, the mine inspector is actually a pretty fucking serious job in Arizona.
Got it. All right, well, never mind.
That's why she's going to skip that one. She's going straight for Senator.
Crazy. I'm running for governor.
Yeah.
yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
Why not have
just
some leapfrog?
All
right. Right. In any event, there is a group that calls themselves God's Army, and they are patrolling streets of Phoenix in the name of Jesus.
Oh, boy.
Oh.
No fucking shit.
Oh, okay.
The group consists of former police officers and military members and claims to have about 50 members. They look like police officers, but their uniforms say, in big yellow print on the back of their flak jackets, God's Army and Jesus.
Oh, my heavens.
Uh-huh.
No pun intended.
Yeah. Richard Tameo used to be a New York City police officer, and now he's, quote, walking the beat in, right, Tameo, tomato. But now he's walking an imaginary beat in North Phoenix. He says, we are prior military, law enforcement background and experience. We go out in the street wearing this uniform, glorifying Jesus, and go in areas affected by crime. They were recently seen talking to store owners, like Eric Wasson, who owns North Valley Bicycles.
Apu, maybe? They were talking to him?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the owner of North Valley Bicycles says, my concern is if these, quote, policemen of God, or whatever they're calling themselves, are not coordinating with local law enforcement, then we just have, like, vigilantes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally.
Wandering around.
And you ain't Batman, bitch.
Yeah.
Drop that mic.
As for Phoenix PD, their official spokesperson said, I do not think we have anything to contribute to this story, which hopefully means that they think that they're crackpots and should go away. Tamayo says that his goal is to call 911 with tips so that police can make arrests. However, you know, he adds that he's not looking for trouble, but if it comes, he's ready.
If he's looking for trouble.
Right. He says, I have handcuffs, mace, and a 9mm Glock.
Right.
There's a second there, I thought it was a date night. But yeah, then...
There's the gun. The group has aspirations to expand to L.A. and New York City, so look for a chapter near you.
For an interesting story, and I'm really surprised no one has ever made a movie about it, or if they did, I didn't see it, about the Guardian Angels in New York. Some called them vigilantes. Some people were really appreciative. They would ride the... they wore these little costumes. It was a really fun disco song called G.A. about them.
Right.
And they would ride the subways and just keep people from being harassed. And they didn't... They didn't... No weapons of any kind, as far as I remember. They may have carried, like, a pepper spray or a mace. But they were helping to keep people safe on the subway systems in New York City.
Sure.
Right after Bernie... Getz.
No, long before that. Bernie Getz is way later.
Okay.
I feel like Bernie Getz is like in the mid-80s. Yeah, he's one of the first big shooters.
Right, right.
I
thought that's what it was in response to.
Let's look.
Yeah.
Well, the Guardian Angels...
you can finish your story? Thank you.
No. We'll just continue on with this because I just Googled Guardian Angels. So here we go. They're a not-for-profit organization that was founded in 1979 in New York City.
Okay.
And Barry Getz was 1984.
Okay.
Yeah. Formed by a man named Curtis and 12 dedicated volunteers in New York City, the Magnificent 13 rode the subways to conduct a safety patrol. For 37 years, thousands of people have joined the Guardian Angels and created chapters in over 130 cities, 13 countries, to protect their communities and improve sustainability and quality of life. See, and this already feels very, very different in that.
Right. They were, yeah. But they got that brand of being vigilantes because it was too radical. It was too to the left, and you had His Honor Mayor Koch and all his evilness at the time.
Right.
Like, kind of fighting any kind of citizens patrol.
Right.
He had lost control of the police department. Crime in New York was just...
Oh, and I'm not anti, like, citizens getting together to like protect their community.
Neighborhood
I'm certainly
watch and stuff
not
like that.
Against that. I'm super against guys with guns in the name of Jesus.
Right, and that's the difference. Because if you read that, I'm 99% sure they carried no weapons, and that was the big
that was the
thing
big
about
deal. Mm-hmm.
The big thing was they had no weapons, so the vigilante thing really didn't, because it was back in the days of what was the big, now they're remaking it, the big Charles Bronson movie, Death Wish, where he goes to avenge the death of his wife. And so he goes to, like, becomes a vigilante stalking the streets of New York. Well, so that was, there was that fear back then. But again, New York
in the 70s.
The 70s, 80s. You know, the one good thing before he turned into a horrible person, Giuliani really did
clean some
up.
Shit up.
Yeah,
sure.
Clean some shit up.
What a strange little man, though.
Did that story say they were targeting a certain area of town, or is it just...
Here in Phoenix? North Phoenix.
Up in North Phoenix, okay.
Yeah, I mean, and neighborhood watches are the best. Like I said, as my neighborhood got better and people started doing that, and there's a neighborhood watch, there's people watching out for each other, there's lights on houses, there's no abandon, it makes a difference.
Yeah.
So being mindful, but carrying a 9mm Glock around is a whole other animal.
I am not against neighborhood watches, I am not against take care of your community, I'm super against guys with guns for God.
Yeah, that's our...
That's
it's
that's
a real no, obvious a line no. in the yeah. sand. Yeah, it's my Syria.
I think that, I think anything like that is really scary, though. Because what are you going to do? Are you going to protect me?
Right.
If I don't believe in Jesus?
Sure.
And are you going to shove this down my throat?
That's the Roy Moore question. Like, will you stand up for anyone who, like, are you really for America or are you just for white Christians? Because that seems to be.
Or for a good
time. And how is he going to deal with a Muslim in the Senate? Like, how. Mm. How will that work?
Right.
Since he's not going to be a fan.
No, right. No. Mm-hmm. So how do you go up to him and work with him when he doesn't think you have a right to be a human? You know what I mean? Like, he's already stated he doesn't believe in your rights as a human. So where are you going?
Where do we start from?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's an awkward mixer. Yeah.
M'lady.
Well, speaking of mixing, Aaron.
Very nice.
But I couldn't go anywhere with it. Sorry. We were talking. Thanks, Harry. We were just in the chat room. I had asked Anant where he was in conjunction to New Delhi, like how far he is. And he's 2 days on a train, so he's not apparently near.
2 days on a train?
2 days on a train.
So he's far away from the pastrami. Yeah. Sure.
Nope. That's right.
What about the old Delhi? Is the old Delhi?
The old Delhi was probably a whole lot better than the new Delhi.
How's their ham?
Well, it depends. Depends. Because breathing in the air there is equivalent to smoking 44 cigarettes a day.
Is this an example of that air you were?
Yeah, that's a picture of it. And I was reading this and I thought, oh my God, how close is an ant to that kind of stuff? Anytime I see anything that has to do with India, I'm like, where is he? This would have been, this picture was from last Friday.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'll put it back up. My bad.
Yeah, that's me. I'm not pollution.
Yeah, that's from last Friday. And earlier.
Casual Friday?
The residents in the Indian capital of Delhi first began to notice the thick white haze that had descended across the city. Initially viewed as a mild irritant, by midweek, its debilitating effects were evident to all as the city struggled to adapt to the new eerie Martian-like conditions that were brought about by the pollution, because it just went dark. Like,
but
now are they in like we are? Like, do they have an inversion layer that they need wind or sun to blow off? Or
I did not see that, from the
way the story sounds is like it just rolled in like a storm does.
Right, because they go through definitely different kinds of pollution stuff off and on, but with visibility severely reduced, trains have been canceled, planes delayed, and cars have piled into each other.
Oh my God.
With multiple traffic accidents reported across the city. The sense that this is now a city under siege has been enhanced by the unusually far-reaching actions of the Delhi government, which had suspended civic construction projects because there's all kinds of emergency stuff. Tuesday afternoon, city chiefs closed all public and private schools, requesting instead that the city's tens of thousands of school-aged children remain indoors.
And, like, no one drive a car.
Mm-hmm. On Wednesday, they banned incoming trucks and halted civil construction projects. Well, Thursday of last week, they announced new plans to begin implementing a partial ban on private car use as of this week. So,
yeah, so you wonder if this is, like, like a weather pattern that is not blowing off? Wow.
Yeah, because it says as of last Friday was the fourth straight day of heavy pollution. Practical considerations were being overtaken by more serious concerns about long-term health implications. Air quality readings in the Indian capital have reached frightening levels, at one point topping a 1,000 mark on the U.S. Embassy Air Quality Index, which I don't totally understand what that means.
They usually say measure that anything above pollutants
25
in the air
is unsafe.
Right.
Yeah. So if this is at 100.
They usually measure air quality in parts per million. Right. So that they count the number of pollutant particles per like million cubic something of air.
Okay.
If 25 is usual.
So small, these particles. I mean, literally, right. you're just inhaling them.
Mm-hmm. No. And seeing this picture reminded me, there was a story we did some time back, I don't recall exactly how long ago it was, and he was a he was an activist, and I believe he was in China.
It was China.
Every morning he would go around. He had like a shop vac on a wagon with charged up batteries, and he literally walked around vacuum running and just held the suction pipe in the air and just sucked in everything he could. I don't know what the timeline was or how long he did it. And then he took everything that was in that vacuum and had it pressed into a brick. Okay. And the point was, this is what we're breathing.
This is what's in the air.
This So when I see that, I'm like, okay, that just needs to be vacuumed up. That's as thick as what China is.
Yeah, because they're people are walking around with the masks and doing whatever, and the concern, because these harmful particles, they're small enough to get lodged deep into the lungs and pass into other organs, causing serious health risks.
And God knows what you're inhaling.
Oh, sure.
Now, this isn't a new phenomenon, though. Mm-hmm. If I've learned nothing else from the Netflix series The Crown,
there you go.
I learned that this happened in the 50s in London, where it shut down the entire city because, like, all of the pollution that was naturally occurring, and then a weird weather pattern, like all of this smog,
shut down London.
Descended and shut down London for a week, almost a week. It lasted from December 5th to December 9th, so like 4 days, but shut the city down.
Okay.
You know what I mean? That kind of a thing. So it's a byproduct of industrialism is what it is.
Yeah, and you wonder, like, if it's like here with our inversion layer, like if you get a day that's not particularly sunny mixed with no wind, that it just sits in our little bucket of valley.
It was bad this morning.
And it's always when it's cold, because cold air is heavy and it sits. Yeah. And it just sits here and we're saddled with it.
Yeah, they have, according to experts, this pollution is made up of vehicle exhaust, smoke from garbage fires, and crop burning, and road dust. So garbage fires and crop burning, and then the road dust. It's like a gas chamber, is what they're saying. And so, unsurprisingly,
there's always that worry that will the air become flammable? Will it be so dense that it actually...
That's scary.
Becomes flammable.
Right. Anand just put in the chat room, the Indian Medical Association actually slammed Delhi chief minister in a public statement saying that it's time to act, not just passing the blame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sounds like the equivalent of what we have in America called thoughts and prayers.
Or Trump.
If your thoughts and prayers could clear the air.
They're very helpful. Yeah.
Yes, they are.
Those thoughts and prayers, they're really solving a lot of problems
for us. And he had said earlier that the government is blaming other governments of the neighboring states. And they're just kind of going back and forth.
And we had a little bit of that wildfire air that blew over. So, I mean, sometimes it is just the wind's blowing the wrong way and the shit from somewhere else comes to your house. Yeah.
But that doesn't look like a lot of natural stuff that's just happening. A wildfire, unfortunately, that's nature burning. But cars, factories that are just...
Right, but if it all combines with the fact that you're polluting the air and then you...
I'm not discounting it at all.
And the shame is that we've all, in here, Anant has brought some things up, that the idea of the poverty level, and the majority of people unable to afford expensive preventative measures are just forced at this point...
Oh, absolutely.
...to endure the conditions as best they can. And I would think that you're just walking around but feeling like you're drowning. You know, this college student, my eyes are tearing up from the smoke and I feel suffocated while waiting for her bus amid the congested traffic. Can you imagine? I mean, just... a cab driver spends his day in the car, and he regularly has to pause to cough while he was just giving this.
Oh, I mean, could you interview? Think of people that have like some asthma or something. Oh, you know what I mean? That already have a breathing problem.
My mom would be dead.
Yeah,
no two ways about it. With the COPD, there's no way.
There's not enough oxygen left.
No. So really scary, and so I just thought that it was good to point that out and send thoughts and prayers too.
Yeah,
that's good. Yeah, I'm glad we sent some thoughts and prayers, because I would feel bad if we didn't.
Well, and the opposite of thoughts and prayers is Cards Against Humanity.
Oh my God, I love them. Yeah.
Just as the world started becoming more and more PC, 8 students from Highland Park School in Illinois had a genius idea to throw caution to the wind and allow people to delve into the deepest and darkest corners of their minds to form sentences that cause the most offense in order to win a pretty basic card game. And let me tell you, if you've ever been trapped in a room for a day with some liquor and played Cards Against Humanity, it is so fucking funny and so offensive.
I've never played it. I don't know much about it, but I've heard this name 100 times.
One of the cards is profoundly retarded, and it just... Mm-hmm. No, profoundly disabled. Mm-hmm. No. But one of them is retarded.
yeah. Okay.
And odds are you win the round with that card, no matter what it is. Yeah,
yeah. And Rush Limbaugh's fat, sweaty body. Like,
oh, and there's expansion packs.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
I bought Aaron the cards. One that's Jews Against Humanity. The Jew pack, it's called. Jew, oh my God, sure. It's fucking hysterical.
Yeah,
that
just is so offensive.
Offensive and okay. Wrong.
So, since its invention, pubs and bars all over the world have run Cards Against Humanity nights. Groups of friends have banged out Cards Against Humanity at pre-drinks, dinner, and parties to entertain themselves. And the company, well, the company itself has grown and grown and grown, and as with any growing company, it's doubting a few mates and having a good time and soon become several departments working in some kind of unison to create a profit. Only Cards Against Humanity haven't become boring and corporate in departments like advertising and marketing. In fact, they're the opposite. So much that they've decided their latest stunt will involve annoying the most powerful man on the planet. Well, after Frau... Well, man, because Frau Merkel's more powerful. The President of the United States, other than our favorite orange toupee-wearing leader of the free world, Donald J. Trump. How are they going to annoy old Trump? Well, they're not going to take the dictator's approach and persistently threaten nuclear war, even that's a bit too far for Cards Against Humanity. Instead, they decided to buy up a plot of land currently vacant on the border of the United States and Mexico, making it extremely difficult for the Don to build that super expensive and wildly unnecessary border wall he is so desperate to build.
Mm-hmm.
As with anything Cards Against Humanity, they're asking their fans to help with the cost and are asking people for just... to fork out $15 to receive 6 surprises in December. An illustrated map of the land, a certificate to fight the wall, and somehow get new cards for your set. So I think this is just fantastic. And something we may actually want to all do as citizens is to buy up land. Because if the government has to give you a reasonable price for it, you might make a profit. Or you could just refuse to sell and just stand there stubbornly and make
fantastic.
That wall make
and just hold out.
Really
yeah.
Fucked it up left turns.
Where's that?
It'd be like Bugs Bunny going to Albuquerque.
Yeah, yeah. Right?
So.
Anant, our country or your country?
I think he means his.
I think he means his, but you never know when we're talking about things with Donald Trump. You know, if. But absolutely, if it's about leaving there, woof.
Yes, it's always important to travel and try new culture, see what everybody's doing, ask him what their rooster sounds like, as David Sedaris says.
Okay.
Oh, right. One of his funniest stories is when he travels, it ends up being about the Dutch Santa Claus, but he goes around and his favorite thing is
Sinterklaas? Is it Sinterklaas there?
No, it's the whole story about the guy with the six or seven black friends that come around and might leave candy in your shoes, or they might kidnap you and pretend to beat you. And
that's
it's absolutely hysterical. But his thing of, like, all the different countries have a different way to say cock-a-doodle-doo, like how we do. Like, there's Coco Rico in places, and it's just a great little icebreaker.
What does your rooster say?
Yeah.
Cute. What does your rooster sound like?
But I think that, I don't know, I have it in my phone as Dutch Christmas, but it's one of the funniest David Sedaris pieces. Right. Who I'm going to see, he's going to be here this Saturday.
Yeah.
He's in
yeah.
town this Saturday.
And Amy Sedaris has a new show on TV. Have you seen the previews for that?
What channel? How, when, why, where?
The one promo, she's got some older lady is with her. I don't know if it's her mom or just a friend. She brings in a mortician to give her a makeover because he's great with makeup. And she goes to this public event and she's just done horribly.
Oh.
I haven't watched it. I've seen the previews, but it's another thing that I think I should watch because she's just funny. But it's about, I think it's called Amy Sedaris at Home.
Okay.
And she's whoever this character is that she is. I mean, they keep calling her Amy, but it's clearly a character that she's got from somewhere. I'm not sure.
I gave my...
Regards to Broadway?
No, yes, but I gave one of my nursing school teachers a copy of her hospitality book, which includes a whole section on washing your vagina. And if
you've got
it a,
one.
A spirited scrubbing is how she describes it. But it's great. All these things to do around the home. And then she gets to this recipe for barbecue chicken, and she tells you how to make the chicken, and then she's like, and you could try to make your own barbecue sauce, but you're an asshole. They make all kinds of barbecue sauces.
Right.
Buy it at the store. No one's going to like you. And it's just, and that's in the recipe, is like how to make the barbecue. Just go buy a sauce you like and put it on the fucking chicken. The chicken's the highlight, but oh my God, don't be that asshole.
I hope you're ready for
this. That's good advice.
Because we're at the end of hour two, and we have to do a tease for hour three. Are you ready? Can you read? Can you make it up?
Let me find, yeah.
Where are the glasses?
Where are the glasses?
Hang on, here we go.
Entertainment! So Gal Gadot becomes even more of a hero. Andy Dick becomes more of a dick.
Yeah,
we already talked about that. We're going to find out about Amy Sedaris. Blake Shelton. Ooh, I don't know.
I get it.
I do not.
I get it.
And then let me go to the other page. I already told you about Slasher. There's a musical coming, and then we talked about that already too.
Well, you managed to take up most of your song for it. That's all right. All right, everybody, we're coming back. It's going to be entertainment kicking off hour three. Stick with us.
You're listening to Q Talk America.